Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Tonight in the studio is Lori,
Riley,
and Mr. Penguin.
Who would store a gun in an oven?
somebody out there.
That is just absolutely insane that there would be someone storing a gun.
I mean,
an oven.
They have warnings on things that you would think nobody would ever do, like the gas station pumps that say, like, don't insert it. Somebody must have done it at least once to get a warning like that.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like...
You've not seen those?
What are we not inserting?
Like, don't insert it up your butt. You've never seen those on the pumps?
I've never seen that.
It's got like a person with the circle with the X through it?
No.
I'll send you a picture.
I've never noticed it. And it's funny because I do read that kind of stuff, just, you know.
Right.
Pure curiosity, you know, what is nobody reading that, like, you're supposed to be reading?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So this was in Chesterfield, Virginia. A loaded gun stored in the oven fired 5 rounds after getting overheated in Virginia, according to authorities. Chesterfield firefighters responded to a call regarding a fire. When firefighters opened the oven, they found a gun inside. Officials said someone turned the oven on with the gun inside. The gun overheated and 5 rounds went off. Please do not store guns or anything else in your oven. Thankfully, no one was hurt. Keep them somewhere secure, like a gun safe. I can't believe anybody would think that that was, like, a good place to put it.
I can't either. Like, that's really surprising me, because you'd think that someone would be smart enough to be like, oh, I shouldn't put a tool in the oven that might have things in it that could explode.
Or anything. Just don't put anything in the oven unless you plan on cooking it.
Right.
And I don't think they were planning on cooking their gun.
Yeah, food is what you don't store stuff in the oven. Maybe a tray or something like that.
Or like a pizza cooking, stone.
But yeah, like, you don't store stuff in the oven. You cook stuff in the oven. And like, if you start doing other stuff with your oven, like, you might actually, like, cause yourself harm, because, like, there's chemicals and other sorts of things on stuff. And so, like, I wouldn't even like there's probably, like, people who do stuff like put clothes in there to heat them up or something.
Oh, man, probably.
Like, just for a couple of seconds. And even to me, that seems like a really bad idea, just because, like, the chemicals that will come off of it, and then they get on the oven, and then they get on your food. And
right.
Yeah. So storing anything in your oven that's not...
Anything.
Not designed for cooking is a really, really bad idea.
I see people, like, storing things on top of their stove, too, like, using it as storage when they're not cooking, which is also a terrible idea. Like, all it takes is to say you have a cat or something, and the cat jumps up there and, like, moves it with its foot, the burner knob.
Oh, cats seem to me to be such a dangerous thing.
I don't have cats.
To have. but, I mean, I'm not criticizing people who have cats or anything necessarily. That just amplifies the danger for sure. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I don't see... I understand the, like, potential danger of having stuff on your like, especially, like, people who have glass ovens, for their stovetop anyway. And I will admit, I use that a little bit for, like, putting stuff on, not like a storage, but just to put stuff down, like, as a countertop. Mm-hmm. And it's convenient. And you gotta be a little bit careful, because it's glass and you don't want to break it or anything. But, it kind of rubs me the wrong way to do it. But at the same time, it's like, you've only got, I mean, I've got a lot of counter space, but, like, you got other stuff on your counters. So it's like, you always end up, no matter how much counter space you have, you always end up having less and less of it. And then it's like, okay, well, where do you put stuff? And then it's like, oh, well, the oven, because you have to clean it, right? Like, you have to clean it regularly. So, or I would want to clean it regularly. So anyway, so there's usually some place to put something.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of having, like, a piece of furniture that's eye level somewhere in the house that is, like, the dumping ground for things, and, like, you just clean it off once a week.
Yeah. I have a couch that kind of ends up like that too.
Yep.
I don't know if I can get to it at the moment, but because there's so much stuff on the floor. But yeah, usually it's the couch where a lot of this stuff is. I just throw stuff on.
Well, counters and tables generally make good storage places for stuff.
Yep. Not so much stoves. Like, even if you don't have a cat, stoves, electric stoves, like, say there's a short or something, like, and something goes wrong and a spark happens, and then now your house is on fire. I think it's a bad plan. But I'm notoriously, like, super duper safe about things. I overthink everything.
Yep.
So that's probably just a me thing.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. What's the there's a term for people who have stuff and they never want to throw it out?
Hoarders.
Yeah.
Hoarders.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of is this is probably, like, somebody's got a level of hoarding that's above what at least I have, at least. Mm. And I don't really have a hoarding problem, but there is like, I do have a lot of stuff that just kind of has built up over the years, and it's like, oh, you got to clean it. You got to find some time to clean it. But it's usually work related stuff that I don't want to deal with. Mm. But
I have the opposite problem. Like it creeps up on you though. Like stuff, the amount of stuff people have slowly over time. You're like, well, how did I get all of these things? And you never really realize how many things you have too until you move.
Buying stuff for people is really hard.
It is. And there's like so much pressure on people to do it for every holiday. Like, oh, there's a holiday coming. You have to buy everybody something or else you're going to feel weird. Like you didn't put in the effort for a thing that they don't even want, probably.
Yeah. My partner and I, we don't give each other gifts. Like it just
really
no. Neither of us are. Huh. Are fans of the whole gift giving, you know, birthday celebration. We'll like for our birthdays, we'll go out and stuff, like, you know, kind of treat ourselves a little bit maybe. But we kind of do that already, like all the time. Mm-hmm. And like, we're grown adults. We have money. It's not like, you know, like we'll buy each other stuff once in a while, but it's not like, oh, I'm going to wrap up a gift and give you something. Right.
Yeah.
And usually it's something functional or something somebody wants. Right. So, yeah. The question is like, who else would I be giving a gift to? There's not a whole lot of people that I probably would be giving a gift to. You know, I don't have kids or anything like that.
Right.
And then, you know, I have, you know, elderly parents and some siblings, but we rarely see each other. So it's like, okay, you know, it's like, yeah.
I'm a total girl about it. So like, I want something, but it doesn't have to be like something big or huge. Like, write me a card. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
yeah, part of it,
except for Mother's Day. I want presents on that day because I think, work hard.
So I will say,
makes sense.
The gifts, like, so my family is, I've got two brothers. And so, you know, that's a male dominated family, or, you know, and my partner's, I'm gay. So my partner is also a male. So it's like, and I think it's definitely more of a feminine kind of thing. And so it's like, okay, so I'll call my mom on like Mother's Day or something like that, but like other than that, and I think that is probably more important to her anyway than me sending her a gift, so I'll do that. But
yeah. it's really is like the thought that does count. Like for little kids, they want presents and stuff, but when you're an adult, like I just want somebody to be like, hey, I thought of you.
Oh, if I had kids, I'd be giving them gifts all the time, but you know, for, you know, birthdays and things like that, but like just as in my where I am in life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I just don't, the whole gift giving thing is like, nope, not doing it.
I'm trying to move away from like the consumerism for birthdays and stuff for my kids, just because they get a thing and then they play with it for however long and then it just sits there. Right. Because they're kids.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to do like experiences. Like for my daughter's birthday, instead of buying her a whole bunch of toys, I bought her like just a couple little things, and then I took her to the science museum.
I mean, the one thing about kids though is that, especially young kids, is that the toys are designed today to be throwaway, you know?
Yeah.
So I mean, that's on the one hand that's not optimal, but on the other hand, that is kind of optimal in that at least when you go to throw it away, you're not throwing away something that would have cost a ton of money back in the day, too. Right. So,
yeah. So some of them are still pretty expensive. Like some of these kids' toys are priced ridiculously.
Really?
Yeah, they want, you know, $150 for a little bear that talks and says 10 things. And then your kid's going to get so bored with that. Don't buy it.
Yeah.
Don't buy that.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of money for a bear that just says 10 things.
Yeah, for like some bear. And they're just only going to play with it for a little while. And they're going to be like, this is boring now.
Yeah, definitely. Those types of toys definitely seem to me to be. I think those types of toys have always been overpriced. Mm-hmm. It's like the technology is there and it's, you know, whether it's expensive or not, it's like, it's not worth the money that you're throwing at it.
Yeah. Like experiences and things that they can use again. That's my big thing. Like I buy my daughter, my oldest, she likes to do art. And so I buy her lots of art supplies.
And the thing is, I bet you the kids, the teddy bears, like just buying them the teddy bears, it's probably just as valuable as buying them like, or almost as valuable as buying them, you know, one of those fancier toys in that area.
Right.
I remember being disappointed as kind of a little kid with a toy like that. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that talked to you a little bit, and it was like, it was super expensive, and it was like, and then you got it, and it was like, well, this isn't what it would look like on television.
Yeah, he doesn't actually come to life.
Yeah,
what a bummer.
Yeah, so
yeah, I don't know. I think that there's like, I'm not like against consumerism, buying things. That's fine. That's how the economy works. It's just
I'm not against capitalism. I feel like I'm against consumerism.
Yeah, I'm against like overconsumption. I guess that's what people mean by consumerism. Yeah, like the overconsumption.
Yeah, when you get to a point where all you do is consume, and you don't build anything back or build memories, then really you ingrain this idea of you have to consume in order to be happy rather than, hey, let's just make memories together.
When you're buying stuff for the sake of buying stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of it too. Like you see these TikToks, like I don't use TikTok, but I know a lot of people that do, and they're like, oh, I got this thing from TikTok, and then I never hear them talk about it again. Like they just bought it and now it sits in their house.
I don't even understand, like people buy things like especially certain types of goods. Like I can't imagine, like, okay, so I understand maybe buying a watch, for example, especially, you know, before, I don't know, when did we have smartphones? Before 2005, something like that. Like, I understand that, right? It's a functional good. But what I don't understand is then when people spend a ton of money on a watch, you know, like they spend $5,000 on a watch. I'm like, what? Like, why would you do that?
No.
Like, what's the value here? I mean, $100 watch looks just as fancy to me as the $5,000 watch.
Right.
And I mean, that $100 watch is really good quality too. Like, it's going to last.
You had a story about Telegram. The founder, Pavel Durov, was arrested basically because he didn't want to moderate Telegram. And so he was being punished for what other people were doing.
Yeah, they basically are accusing him of they're implicating him in crimes based on the fact that he's the CEO of a communications platform, even though he's not aware of the specific crimes. And this is kind of crazy, because so normally, like, it's not enough in theory, at least, like in a court of law, to say, okay, you're aware of the fact that bad stuff happens on a platform. It's you were aware of specific stuff that happens on a platform, and you did nothing, or it was reported and you didn't. You didn't take it down. That might be a problem. But like just this whole, oh, there's all sorts of bad stuff. Well, there's all sorts of bad stuff happening on every platform.
Of course there is. Facebook, Twitter, you name it. There's all sorts of quote unquote bad stuff happening. Are these platforms supposed to suddenly regulate everything that everyone does?
That's what they want them to do. I personally don't think, even if somebody says something bad or like they're doing something bad with your platform, I don't think that's your responsibility.
Well, yeah. I think you're right. But, you know, and it's also kind of interesting because it's like, okay, so what they're accusing him effectively is not having enough staff to moderate, because they're saying like the company isn't moderating, and that's actually misleading. The issue is more along the lines of it's a small company. They have a lot of users. The growth has been very recent, and they do moderate. They've worked with numerous police, right? And this is a criticism I've had over the years with Telegram. And knowing how it was designed, it was a concern that I had all the way back in like 2016, I think roughly around that time when we actually started using it. And in our community, is that the way it's designed, it can be censored. And it, at some point they probably will censor it, even if, you know, he's operating in some foreign country. Right. And it's operated out of, well, Dubai, I believe, or the U.S. I think it's Dubai, or is it Dubai? It's somewhere in the Middle East. But the problem is that governments have their means of coercion.
Yeah,
they do. And they want to coerce the average person to be obedient.
Yep. And so in this case, they're basically bringing up what I would say probably almost amounts to false charges, probably, because it, you know, it's obviously, you know, he's not the one who is going to be moderating it, right? Like, there's a team of supposedly maybe 30 people, maybe it's 50 now, but it's a small team. I think there's about maybe 10 moderators, supposedly, I've heard. And so that's, they're moderating, and there's been stories over the years where they've deleted. We actually know there was one Telegram group that people in our community were in for 3D printing, and that actually got deleted or banned or something by Telegram.
Wow.
So you can't tell me that. And this was, I don't know, this was in the last year, maybe, like maybe a year ago or something like that. And so you can't tell me that Telegram isn't being moderated. It right. is being moderated. No, maybe it's not being moderated to the degree that some of the police want, but they are cooperating now, whether, you know, and it's like, can you really punish a company for developing a program that simply doesn't have the staff to moderate? And to what degree should they even be responsible for it? The company is not, you know, making a, I believe if my recollection is correct, the company has, isn't, they're not making a ton of money, right? Like yeah, they don't have
think so
the resources. Like, why should they be obligated just because they wrote a program to moderate?
Yeah, I wouldn't think they'd be making a lot of money because most people are not paying to use Telegram. I don't pay to use Telegram.
Nope. And the crazy thing is the only reason that they're even can be mandated to moderate under the law is effectively because they host some of the they have servers. And so when you put something on Telegram, it's not being stored on your computer and then transferred to another user's computer. It's, and that would be like a peer-to-peer type situation. Mm-hmm. If the program was redesigned a little bit, ever so slightly, they would not need those servers to host content. And then they wouldn't, the government wouldn't have any argument as far as moderating it in the first place because they wouldn't have that the ability or the ability to do so.
Creighton in Kentucky. Hi, Creighton.
Hello.
Hi.
I jumped in this conversation because this talk was the guy that got arrested in France running
Pavel.
But Telegram, is that what it is?
Telegram.
Yeah, Telegram.
Well, it just points out again that in order to be the people we are, we're going to have to develop and use alternative systems of communication. And one that hasn't come up, I don't think it's come up on this show, and I wanted to bring it up. It's called Noster.
Oh, yeah, we've talked about Noster.
See, Noster does, it's a protocol, not a company. And you got to think about what the company of Telegram actually does. Well, how do they make money? But they do. Obviously, they do in some way. But the question is how. And that
it's currently it's currently funded by a very wealthy individual owner. But yeah, they are working towards making a profit.
But you understand what I'm saying, though, is that if the company is expensive, it's expensive to pay people to moderate. It's expensive to pay for servers.
The servers, right. And the servers are the expensive part at this point in time because the company is so small in terms of employee count. You're right. They've got some crypto stuff that they've got going on. But I don't know that they've actually been profitable. And they have some subscription services as well that they offer, but it's very limited as far as their, like what they're making money off at this point.
Well, I distrust companies where I don't understand how they make money.
So Telegram, we actually do understand, I think, how they make money. It's just that they're not making a ton of money at this time.
That's a good general rule though. Like anything that's free, you are the product.
Yeah. There's some criticisms for Telegram that I will point out. Telegram, in some respects, is not as bad as something like Signal. And Signal is end-to-end encrypted. Telegram is not, for the most part, except for when you do secret chats. But what it doesn't require, what Telegram doesn't require is a proprietary component, which potentially opens up opens you up for back doors and things like that. You can't even really talk about security until you've removed any kind of proprietary components, in the chain. So I write off Signal right away. WhatsApp also, that's completely proprietary, I believe. And that, so I would write that off right away. Telegram is not, there's versions of it where there's a complete set of source code, but you do have to keep in mind that there's encryption, but it's not end to end encrypted. So the middleman is Telegram and the company, and they can see what you're doing and see most chats potentially if they want to. Mm-hmm. The solution that exists right now that is end to end encrypted that isn't the case is going to be Matrix. Matrix is a protocol, and Element is one of the applications that you can use to connect to Matrix, and it's a decentralized, it's a decentralized, I think, federated solution is the way to phrase that, where there's multiple different entities and individuals and organizations that have set up servers, and you can connect to any one of those servers and send messages to another user, even if they're on another server, and those communications are end-to-end encrypted. So,
Matrix is great.
Yep.
Well, I mean, I'm less concerned about the encryption part itself, because, you know, if you know what you're doing, you can encrypt your own stuff. But what I mean about Noster is that it's not just a decentralized, it's also a protocol that cannot be, can't even be moderated or censored in any way.
Is it?
There's a downside, of course, to that. Is it, you don't, I don't want my children to look at that too young, because it's the Wild West.
Is it? Yeah. Is it peer-to-peer, too? Like, are there central servers or federated servers?
It's peer-to-peer, yes.
It's completely peer-to-peer? So there's no...
Not completely, no.
There's a bootstrapping server, maybe, and that's about it? Or is it got, like, you can upload files to it?
I don't believe you can upload files to it.
Okay, so it's probably got, like, a bootstrapping server.
It's kind of set up like a Twitter.
It kind of acts like Twitter most of the time. It depends on your client, but the client the protocol itself is not limited to that.
Okay.
It could work in different ways, but it's kind of intended to kind of be like a Twitter. But you can have private groups too, like you can in most other places.
Interesting.
Sounds more like Telegram to me.
But,
because the
I think that's the point.
Yep. Okay.
It is be able to have, you know, those kind of text-based communications around the world that cannot be interfered with. Again, like I said, though, that kind of technology comes with disadvantages.
Oh yeah.
Is that, you know, as parents, we got to be constant watching over it, because it's one thing to demand free speech for adults, you know. I can choose not to look at that stuff.
Yep.
But my, I'm not going to just let my 12-year-old run across Noster either.
That's just good parenting, though. Like, you should be aware of what your kids are doing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This sounds like a situation that we've lost the. Traditionally, it's been, you know, this is what parenting was for, right? Like, and I think over the years, it's kind of been, we went from a time in which, you know, we had kids in, you know, slave camps working, you know, at, you know, industries, right? Mm-hmm. Growing into mines and things like that. And there, at that time, there was no concept of childhood, right? And then it kind of went into, okay, let's think of the children a little bit and, you know, put some restrictions on this. And then eventually it was like, okay, well, children can't work anymore. And then it became, which was, I think, a bad thing, really. Because, you need to teach, responsibility and, like, you know, being able to, like, have some control over your life. And if you can't work, then you don't have any control over your life. And that's a bad thing, right?
I mean, you can still do that for your kids individually. You can, like, give them a job to do and pay them.
To some degree. But having a job that's not within the family is different than having a job, like, a little job.
I'm not going to fire my kid.
Yeah, I think that's a good example of that.
Yeah.
So anyway, then we went to, like, We went to this, like, paranoid. We've kind of become paranoid, and I think that probably changed sometime between, like, the 70s and the 90s.
I think it was closer to the 90s, because in the 80s they didn't even know where we were.
Riley, you wanted to comment on the before we left, and you didn't get a chance. I just want to give you the opportunity if you still have a thought.
About the discussion on privacy with Skeeter, I firmly think that privacy is extremely important, because when you have privacy, you have the ability to decide what actions or thoughts or behaviors are seen by other people. And this is good, because you don't want everything in your life broadcast to the entire world for 24 hours a day, because if no one had privacy, it would be a horrible world. We would begin to disintegrate so fluently as society that we would forget who we are. Because everyone would be like, well, you know everything about you.
And And, you know, you're allowed to be consensually weird.
Oh, yeah.
Like, in your own time without people knowing about it, except for the people that you want to know about it. That's totally fine. And should right, be, and should be, you know, your choice on who knows how weird you are in your free time.
You can be completely weird around your friends and play Dungeons and Dragons or whatever and not tell anybody about it. And
I wasn't quite talking about that weirdness. But like,
well, I don't know. Like we added Riley here.
Riley is very innocent.
Everybody has. It's interesting. Everybody has weird thoughts. I mean, they just don't say them, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter. You could be the most upstanding person in society, and there's thoughts that go through your head that are like, oh my God, I can't believe that. That I just thought, you know, it. I mean, well, I may not agree with that thought, but it went through my head.
These
right?
are intrusive thoughts, and they happen from time to time. They don't come from a boogeyman or from Satan or whatever. They're just intrusive thoughts that our mind thinks of every once in a while. I mean, like, oh, that's just a weird thought. I should not think about it.
That's anymore. A horrible thought. I think that all the time. Like, it's like, I don't agree with that thought that went through my head, but it's horrible, right? I would never say it. You know, I would never do it, but it happens to every one of us. It's totally natural. It's totally normal.
I feel like people have like very intrusive thoughts of like very specific categories that personal to themselves. Like some people have intrusive thoughts about like things that they want to say. And some people have intrusive thoughts about things they do to other people. And some people, I have intrusive thoughts like about my own self. Like, oh, I'm just going to throw my phone out the window on the highway. Or like...
It's perfectly natural to want to push your kid off the bridge when they're...
See, I don't have those.
Misbehaving.
I don't have those ones. Mine are all about me.
It's that you don't, that it's important.
Yeah.
Right?
Mine are always like, oh, you're cutting something? Just cut your finger off.
Wow.
Stuff like that. It'll be fine. So mine are never about anyone else, which is nice because then, you know, I never have to worry that I'll go insane and like hurt somebody. I'll just cut my own finger off or something.
Well, and you know, it's actually interesting. So being able to, you know, express your thoughts, not even necessarily publicly, but just privately, which because we have thought crimes, and it's actually been shown that if you don't have those thought crimes, there's actually like a relationship. Like it's kind of a terrible example, but like pornography and rapes. When you outlaw pornography, rapes go up.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is...
You're taking away an outlet.
Yeah, you're taking away an outlet for individuals. And
that actually makes sense.
Yeah. So no matter what you might think of somebody looking at pornography, there is a negative consequence to outlawing it.
There has been some studies. I don't know if it's the current data because I don't stay up on this kind of thing. But previously there were some studies saying that like OCD can be... can stem from having intrusive thoughts and stuffing them down and not allowing yourself to think them and like worrying about your intrusive thoughts and being like, oh no, I feel bad for having that, instead of just being like, ha, that's funny, and then just dismissing it.
That's actually that's what I do cool with mine. Deal with your intrusive thoughts is just laugh about them.
That's how I do it. I'm like, okay. Wow, that's ridiculous. I'm not gonna like scoop my eyeball out with a spoon right now. That would be absolutely absurd to do, Lori. Why would you even think that? And then I just move on.
Yeah,
but people can dwell on them, and it can trigger OCD, like
scrupulosity
problems. Just like, so you become obsessive about other things in your life. You just start obsessing over things.
I think that's one of the big things I don't like about organized religion is a lot of them have rules and regulations around certain behavior. Around the way you think, the way you behave, what you put in your body, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, you can have these things, but the reality is when you have these intrusive thoughts, they claim they come from the devil, and you're pushing them down, you're pushing your behaviors down, and you're pushing all this away, you're not doing what Lori does and laugh about it and be like, oh, that's absurd.
Laugh about them.
It's interesting too, because it's like just because something is bad doesn't necessarily mean that it should be like outlawed, right? Like, and I think the drugs are kind of a good example of this. It's like, you know, and if you think about it, most of us aren't going to refuse drugs that, you know, dull the pain of a surgery or, you know, something, something like that. And so what do you think? A lot of people get addicted because they were prescribed drugs, and then those drugs, you know, wear off and they're still in pain. And so then they go and get, you know, illicit drugs.
Yeah. Well, they go back to their doctor and they're like, I'm still in pain. And they're like, you're just drug seeking.
Yeah.
And they turn you away and then you go look for
drugs. And so in society, people, they don't think about why the problem occurs. And then it's like the quick fixes to outlaw drugs, you know, make certain drugs illicit and hard to get. And then it's like, but you have never solved the problem. So people just go and get the illicit drug. Like, well, so,
the thing to remember too is a lot of people say, well, I don't want my kids having drugs.
Parent your child.
Yeah. Well, parent your child, like, them, talk to them about why you don't want them to have drugs. Talk to them about what drugs do. And if they decide to have drugs,
the dangers of potentially taking substances. Right.
And if you decide to let them have a drug, you know, let them come to your house.
You're not letting your kids do anything.
I'm not.
Yeah.
Nobody
lets their
kids do anything. Kids will just do things.
Yep. Sure. Very true.
People say, oh, control your children, that's not a real thing. Like, you can't actually control them. The only thing you can do is educate your kids and try to tell them why they should do what you want them to do because it's a good choice. But you can't make them do anything.
Yeah.
Mark Brazo is on the line. What would you like to talk about, Mark?
I just wanted to ask a question. Not in judgment, but just to try and raise my comprehension. Skeeter criticizes libertarians, in my opinion, but what is he? Is he a liberal or conservative? You know?
He's a, what does
he
likes
say to call himself an evolutionary capitalist and an accelerationist.
Yeah, yeah.
He wants to solve the problems by, like, causing the downfall of society, something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or letting the downfall occur,
but accelerating it.
Yeah, make it go faster. So, like, more socialism in order to result in, you know, it failing, basically. I think is what he would say.
Yeah.
In addition to that, what if there are outside forces outside the country or anywhere, and they're trying to ruin the country, the military and everything, so they can usher in this programmable digital currency? And if it's programmable and they don't like what you or I say, you know, it could be maybe worse than the communist China, where they can shut off the money. You can't use transportation, public transportation. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there doesn't need to be an outside source that's trying to do that, because the U.S. government themselves is trying to do that. They're trying to.
All governments are trying to do that. Yeah,
they
pretty much
are.
Yeah, they're trying to.
That's what stable coins are, basically, is it's government controlled currency, digital currency. And the Bitcoin, something like Bitcoin or Monero, are the exact opposite of that, in that they're not controlled. And that's one of the benefits. It eliminates that centralized power that governments have that is then used to abuse people.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good, but they have the power and we kind of don't, or am I wrong?
No, you're correct. They have...
With the stable coins, the government-controlled stable coins, they have the power, but with the true cryptocurrencies, don't.
With actual...
Right, I meant with the bad control.
Yeah.
They have.
Yes. If they
with the banks
roll out, with like a digital currency that the government or any government would hold against the people. Yes. They would have the power in that situation to shut off your ability to trade and to live.
Yep. Yeah. And here's the thing that people don't, I think a lot of people don't understand, is the government already has a lot of power. You know, when it comes to, you know, the banks and things of that nature. And so they have used that power and they have abused that power, but most people haven't really seen it. And they've been somewhat restricted in their use, but it exists, and you can definitely point to many examples. And those examples, you know, they keep expanding the categories and the people, the number of people that they're using these tactics against. So, for example, it used to be primarily used against people who, and this is actually a fairly recent phenomenon, even though they've had the ability for quite a while, I think. In the United States, as an example, is where it started. And people who worked in the sex industry, legal sex industry, like pornography, things like that, and especially in certain states, these people were threatened by the government using regulations by one of the regulators by sending a letter to a bank, all banks and financial institutions in the United States, saying, if you are, I'm trying to think the terminology they used, but basically they said something to the effect of what it would translate into layman's speak is you have to cut off anybody who's ever been involved in any kind of sex industry.
Blacklisted.
Blacklisted. So, for example, if you were in the porn industry as an actor or an actress 20 years ago and you haven't even worked in the industry in 20 years, even if you've been banking at the same bank for 25 years, that bank now has to cut you off. And if you try to go get another bank account at another bank, they won't allow you to get an account either, where they'll cut you off as soon as they realize that you worked in the porn industry.
Yeah. And then with a digital currency though, spread that to every single person.
Right. They've already taken it farther. So that's an example in the US. If we look at Canada started doing the same thing. But do you know where, I don't know where else Canada does it, but one of the bigger examples that applies to a lot more people is that during the truckers protest, now you can be for or against, it doesn't really matter, but anybody who was at the truckers protest, the government tried to identify and then shut their bank accounts off. So they couldn't access their debit cards, they couldn't access their credit cards, they couldn't access their money. And they were trying to, basically censor a group of people through financial means. Mm-hmm. And this is the danger of giving the government power. Now, the Canadian Supreme Court ruled that that wasn't constitutional. I believe it was here recently, but it didn't change or stop the fact that the government did it. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And it didn't change the fact that the government will continue to do it. And if they can find a way to get away with it.
And this is the danger of things like laws regarding sanctions and, giving the government or an agency, a regulatory agency, the power to, threaten banks and things like that. Even if it's not written in the law that the regulatory agency has that power, because they have the power to threaten, they also have the ability to imply certain things through letters and things like that that aren't law itself. Because at the end of the day, if you don't do what the regulator says, the regulator is going to come down on you for other stuff. And when you can't actually comply because the law is complicated, you are breaking other laws and they will go after you for those other laws, even though that's not the reason they're going after you. It's because you didn't do what they're demanding that wasn't legally required. But ultimately, because the regulator wants it, is going to get their way.
Mm-hmm. And can you imagine? So the reason they say they want these central cryptocurrencies is because cash is a shadow economy, is what that you can create a shadow economy, which basically translates to we don't have our hands in your pockets at every moment of your life. So, but can you imagine when they are like, oh, you sent Riley $20, we want 10% of that.
Because we want to
tax every transaction you make. Mm-hmm. So let's say there's a sales tax in your state and you go to buy something from the store. Well, normally you'll pay that sales tax, right? And it'll show up on the bottom of the receipt. But what if they started charging you not just the sales tax, but they also charged you a 2% on every transaction that you made? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter whether you're transferring it from one bank account that you control to another bank account you control, or you're sending money from your account to your kid's account, your college, right, in college. Now, normally that wouldn't be a taxable transaction, but the government is now implementing a new form of tax. And that's one of these things these stable coins, enable.
So we were multiple times trying to get into the story of the Telegram founder.
Yeah, so I have a story from The Verge. It's titled, Telegram Changes Its Tone on Moderating Private Chats After CEO's Arrest. So the founder, Pavel, was arrested in France, for basically failing to, moderate is what they're claiming. Even though he did moderate, or the company moderated, Telegram, and they've actually been doing so for quite some time now. So this is clearly coercion on the French government's part.
Absolutely.
And here's what Telegram has done in response to that coercion. Telegram has quietly, I love the word quietly, I'm not sure how they could possibly have quietly done this given the fact that they're being looked at with a fine-tooth comb.
I'm guessing they say it's being done quietly because it's not being announced in a public press release statement type thing.
Maybe, but like, I think this is a very left wing. So The Verge is, I think, funny. I think it was funded by a libertarian actually. But somehow it ended up being like this left wing outlet. And I think that's where this tone is coming from. And I don't know if it ended up going in that direction as a result of the clicks, because clicks are what make you money.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, scare factor, you know, that the left is great at that.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense from like a libertarian owning a left wing paper, that because they always love to scare you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously it makes money for a libertarian, and libertarians are more capitalist. So
right.
It's just so weird, though. All right. So Telegram has quietly removed language from its FAQ page, frequently asked questions, saying private chats were protected and that we do not process any requests related to them. The change comes nearly 2 weeks after its CEO, Pavel, was arrested in France for allegedly allowing criminal activity to go on undetected on the messaging app. Yeah, it's so this is the problem. The way this is phrased is criminal activity to go undetected on the messaging app. There is no obligation to monitor the messages on posted to social networking sites in the first place. If it was a failure to respond to like DMCA takedown notices or something equivalent to that in Europe, there then is maybe potential criminality here.
The phrasing is very intentional, I think.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. It's not illegal for there to be illicit content on your platform. That's not what's illegal. You can know that illicit activity happens on your platform. What is not legal is to know of a specific instance and not remove it. It's something yeah. along those lines. That's the line that exists, and it's not really specific to even communications. Like a gun dealer, for example, or gun manufacturer, they know people use their guns to commit crimes, but they don't knowingly sell their guns to people who say they're about to commit crimes.
Right.
And so that's basically the difference.
I think they're trying to make a statement here with the way that that's phrased, that you do have the responsibility to spy on your users.
That's definitely not the case in the United States. And one of the issues
this
here
is France, right?
Yeah, this is yeah. France. Now, one of the issues here, too, is jurisdiction, right? And this is one of the dangers of this. And nobody ever brings this up, and it's really messed up. So Telegram does not have employees off an office. It doesn't have anything in France to extend France's jurisdiction to Telegram.
So how are they doing this then?
Well, this is another really concerning aspect, because what this would be equivalent to, say, China, the United States maybe allowing China to extradite me, because I have a company and we sell a privacy preserving product that's completely legal in the United States.
The United States is like, hey, TikTok, who's based out of China, you can no longer operate.
It would be like
they have no
it's
standing.
Yeah, and that should be the case. Now, yes, he is a French citizen and he is visiting France, but he never committed any crimes in France.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe his company would be committing crimes in France if he was working in France, or
right.
if the company had an office in France, or the company had a bank account in France, but that's not the case here. So
it seems like they're getting away with it, though, because he's being forced to do something about it.
So, well, they're threatening, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean that what they're doing is legal.
I have an article I'd like to talk about. This is from 19thnews.org. Would you trust AI to scan your genitals for STIs? Would you?
It depends on how it's conducted. Is it an AI that is... Does the AI have a centralized database where I upload this stuff to? Is it an app?
Oh, we'll find out.
Okay.
The 19th spoke with sexual health educators and computer science researchers about how to assess claims made by AI-powered apps. In March, health technology startup HeHealth debuted Calmara AI, an app proclaiming to be your intimacy bestie for safer sex. The app was heavily marketed to women who were told they could upload a picture of their partner's penis for Calmara to scan for evidence
oh, wow.
of a sexually transmitted infection.
Oh, my God.
Users would get an emoji-laden clear or hold verdict with a disclaimer saying, the penis in question wasn't necessarily free of all STIs. which is absurd. Like, how many can you actually see with the naked eye? Just a few, right?
Yeah, probably just a few. Some, I think a lot of them are transmitted through fluids.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I guess if you got like lice or something like that, although yeah. I don't know if that would be an STD.
Or like HPV warts or herpes. And I think that's it.
So I was thinking like this would be like maybe like a device or something that like, I don't know, like you would have
like a pulse oximeter that
I'm
you
thinking
put on,
like,
clip
yeah,
on there.
You'd end up with some fluids onto some sort of device and then it would analyze like, I don't know, some sort of something from as a result of the, I don't know, like somehow test the fluid and then the AI would work on process the data. Like,
yeah, maybe, but
like that would make sense to me. This, I would never use something like this.
Just take a picture of it and we'll tell you if it looks normal or not.
Yeah.
I feel like you should be able to do that yourself. Just like,
oh yeah, you should
look
be
at it.
I mean, yeah, you can probably, well, I mean,
it depends on how knowledgeable you are about STIs. I mean, like,
you know,
if you're having sex, you should be knowledgeable.
Yeah, you should be. You should be knowledgeable about what your partner's history is, what your history is.
I'm trying to think
how is this actually working, like in theory, right? Like, so I guess the answer is it's not really detecting the STD, it's detecting the symptoms that are a result of the STD.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for example, maybe you have some sort of rash going on down there,
right?
Or you have, I don't know, like some, I mean, I don't know how it would, like, it's not going to be able to detect itching from a picture.
Right.
So I'm not sure like how that would work, but.
Or burning sensation.
Yeah. Or burning sensation.
You're not going to get a picture of that.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, yeah, it's an interesting one.
I can't imagine also like the way it was marketed towards women. Just take a picture. Can you imagine like about to get down and then you're like, hold on.
I've got right. take a picture of your junk.
I'm right. just going to take a picture of your junk and put it into my app here to see how you're doing.
Yeah, that would be that'd
be kind of an awkward conversation.
That would be the quickest way to get me to run the other direction.
Yeah, instant mood killer.
Oh yeah.
The reaction Ella Dawson, sex and culture critic, had when first saw Calmara AI's claim to provide AI powered scans that give you clear science backed answers about your partner's sexual health status can be easily summed up: big yikes. Me too. I feel the same way.
I agree. Big
she guy. Raised the alarm on social media, voicing her concerns about privacy and accuracy. The attention prompted a deluge of negative press and a Los Angeles Times investigation.
It's an app. You should not trust apps in the first place, people on your phones, right? These things are so notoriously like malicious. Most of the apps in like the app stores, malicious, okay? Mm-hmm. You do not want to be installing them. I don't care if it's the McDonald's app, it's your bank's app, it's an AI app to detect STDs. Most of these apps are malicious.
Mm-hmm.
They either don't do what they say, or they're tracking you, or they're sending your data back, or they're listening in on your conversations when you don't want. And I'm not talking about, yes, your phone might already be doing that, right? And it might already be doing something malicious. But installing yet another app just increases the number of apps and the number of companies and entities out there and people who are doing things and hearing you and listening to your conversation. Why would anybody do that?
Because people don't even look.
It's ignorance, I think. You know, it's, I don't want to say arrogance, but it's ignorance
factor, I think. And they just want, they just think, oh, well, I can upload this picture of my partner's penis and get an accurate idea of what STIs
it's
may have.
Probably
absolutely not.
I suspect it's probably false advertising mostly here, but yeah, I mean, even to the degree that it could detect this or that, I would not.
I can't imagine, like, if you download something like a game on your phone and you go into your permissions, you can see that they're like, I want to listen to you, I want to track you. Why does a game need that, everybody? Why does a game need all of that unless they are taking that information and selling it?
Even if, and here's the thing, even if this app, and I suspect this app is free, but I don't know, but what they probably are doing at a minimum, let's say they're not sending your genitalia to, you know, some porn website, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just assume that they're selling your, usually this is what's going on, they're selling your marketing data. So you are now on a list of people to advertise drugs to for your STD.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you start getting
if you wonder why you're getting advertisements for STDs and you've used this app, Well, there. Stop asking. That's you have an answer. Yeah. I'm telling you, it's because you use this app.
It's insane. It's insane. And I can't believe that they thought that that marketing, just take a picture of someone else's genitals
right?
and send it to this company, was good marketing. I would never, if somebody else asked me if they could take a picture of me to send their app, I would be like, you're out of your mind and we're never going to talk to each other again, ever.
Yeah.
You're insane.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm also just thinking about the legality of the app too. Like, I mean, I wonder if it asks you, are you 18? Or is the person that you're taking a picture of 18 or older or 21 or older?
Do they consent?
Yeah, right. Do they consent? I mean, there's like a bunch of things I would be like, as the app developer being like, just like,
and how do you stop underage kids downloading this thing and taking pictures, like, and then now you have child porn in your app?
Like, that's what I would be concerned about. Like those are things I would be concerned about. Like, I mean, you know, I think there's like, okay, so there supposedly are carve outs for that kind of thing in theory. But then again, I'm wondering, is this app even, so there's also, so like legally speaking, the app probably has to be registered and they're like with the government in regards to being a medical device. Mm-hmm. And so there's all these other hoops that probably it's violating, I suspect. Like, so there's all these different angles and issues that are like liability wise. I'd be like, yeah, I hope you're not operating like from within the United States. And then it's like, they still may try to like claim jurisdiction over you because you submitted it to like the App Store or the Google Play Store, which are U.S. companies. Therefore, they're going to try and claim jurisdiction over you. Like,
There was this page, I think it was on Facebook. I believe it was a page or a group that said that they were doing like online breast exams. And so women would take pictures and send them to this group.
Oh my
group.
God.
Yeah. Wow, so like, that's all that's going through my head too. Is just somebody who wants all these pictures like for fun.
I am always amazed at the number of naive people out there. And I think it's probably most Americans. It's like people really like, I don't know, man. Like, you would think like they're not well educated. They're not well read.
Nope.
I mean, they're not even like paying attention to what's going on around them. Mm-mm. All. And it's like I mean, if somebody called, like, I'm just thinking of like scams and things in particular. Like, you know, if you get a random phone call and it's somebody pretending or saying that they're your bank, like, have you had that happen before? Because I've only ever had that happen once, and it was like, oh, can you come down here right now and just verify whether or not like you wrote this check or not.
Mm-hmm. I won't even like calls from electric, like someone saying they're the electric company or the cable company, anything like that. I will not talk to them. If they call and I pick up and they're like, oh, this is whoever, I'll be like, cool, I'll call you back.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.